So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 11, Calculation of Time from the Atom, text number 32, in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, lies down in the water on the seat of Ananta. And with his eyes closed, and the inhabitants of the Janaloka planet offer their prayers unto the Lord with folded hands. Report. We should not understand the sleeping condition of the Lord to be the same as our sleep. Here the word yoga nidra is specifically mentioned, which indicates that the Lord's sleeping condition is also a manifestation of His internal potency. Whenever the word yoga is used, it should be understood to refer to that which is transcendental. In the transcendental stage, all activities are always present, and they are glorified by prayers of great sages like Bhrigu. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatāparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vidamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschat Yadeshatarine. So the point is very clearly made here, that Krishna does things that we do also, like sleeping. Here the incarnation of the Lord, Lord Sankarshan, he's sleeping. But that doesn't mean his sleep is like our sleep when we go into the mode of ignorance. So the point is that God is not impersonal. God has activities. He's a person. He has friends, he has his parents, he has associates, he has pet calves. He has a certain style of dress that he enjoys, a certain flute that he relishes. We can see a similarity between an ordinary person, actually, and the Lord. But the difference is, everything Krishna does is extraordinary. That's the difference. Krishna's Adipurusham, Govindam Adipurusham, Tamaham Bhajami. He's the original person. We have personality because Krishna has personality. Not like Charles Darwin says that we just comes out of some evolution. We are manifest simply by the sweet will of the Lord to have loving vasa, loving relationship. That's why we exist. So to perfect our existence, we have to reconnect with that person, that original person who is manifesting us simply for the purpose of loving relationship with Him. In other words, to love God, that is your natural constitutional position. To not be in a loving relationship with God, with Krishna, is a natural position. Happiness comes when you're in your natural position. You cannot be happy when you're in an unnatural position. People talk now about getting back to being natural, but they don't know what is nature in the highest sense. They take material nature, you see. Like hippies going naked in the forest. I'm being natural, man. They don't understand what is the original meaning of natural. What is your original identity before you got encaged in this material body? Before you got stuck in the cycle of birth and death? And then we're talking about natural, you see. Is it natural for a citizen to be imprisoned as an inmate in the prison? Or is it natural for him to be a free citizen? Is it? The natural position is to be a free citizen, loyally serving his government. That is the natural position. If one deviates from the natural position for a citizen, then he is put into the prison, hopefully to rectify him, although unfortunately it rarely happens. But it's meant to rectify. Sometimes they call prisons reformatories. It's supposed to reform you. Actually, generally, they become more hardened criminals because of the imperfection of the society. So natural means to come back to your original nature. Satchidananda vigraha. That is your original nature. Ishvaraha paramaha krishnaha satchidananda vigraha anadir antir govinda sarvakarana karanam. Krishna is Ishvara parama. He is the supreme controller. He has an eternal form full of bliss and knowledge. He has no origin anadir. Adir, he is the origin. He is also called Govinda. And he is sarva-karana-karanam, the cause of all causes. So we being products of Krishna, we being the energy of Krishna, we are qualitatively one with Krishna. Since Krishna is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, our position also is we are eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Just like the drop of ocean water, it possesses the same chemical composition as the ocean. It's a mistake, however, to think that it is the ocean, as the Mayavadis claim, that self-realization means you merge back into the ocean and become the entire ocean. Does a drop of ocean water ever become the entire ocean? You cannot do that. It doesn't work like that. Actually, the individual water molecules in that drop remain individual water molecules. They don't lose their individuality. The simile of the Mayavadis is a false analogy. And that water sitting in the ocean, after some time, what does it do? It evaporates, it returns to the land again, just as the Bhagavatam explains about the Mayavadis. Apantiyadho, they fall back again to material existence. So give up this idea of being absolutely one with God with no difference. Give up this idea, you see. It's false philosophy. The fact is that Krishna wants loving relationships. He wants rasa, he wants taste. Taste comes in relationship. All of us desire relationship. If somebody has no relationships, what do? They get a dog, and they have a relationship with their dog, isn't it? Everybody craves relationships, because that is our nature. We are relationship seekers, but we are burned by all of the selfish, greedy situations that we encounter in trying to have relationships in this world. We're very much burned by it. We become frustrated. There was one song, love is a four-letter word. You see, they become disgusted with trying to have loving relationships. That's because they're looking for love in the wrong place. They're going about love in the wrong way. Their idea of love is a self-centered type of love. They don't realize that the only way to achieve true love is to come to a God-centered conception. Then your love becomes pure, becomes genuine, it becomes true, it becomes truly satisfying. Ahaitakiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. Unless you come to a love which is free of any material motivations and is not interrupted by other things, it's simply going on full steam ahead 24/7. That's the only love that satisfies, you see. That is Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, we're selfish. We're not loving people, actually. We may act very sometimes in the mode of goodness, but even that is contaminated with selfish desires of various sorts. We don't know what is genuine love in this material world. But if we're fortunate to come in contact with a devotee of the Lord who represents purely the sweet, loving mercy of the Lord, then we get a taste of what is actual love, you see. Then we get a taste of what is actual love. And the seed of love becomes planted in the heart. Bhakti lata bij. Divine love, pure spiritual, transcendental love. So if we're intelligent and if we're fortunate, when that seed becomes planted in the heart, we will nurture it. This is something wonderful. Let me treasure it. Let me keep it very nicely and try to increase it. You see? That's where the hearing and chanting process comes in. If one is blessed by meeting a devotee and it gets this seed of bhakti in the heart, and you actually realize, what is this great fortune I have achieved, that I've been blessed with, then one will cultivate bhakti lata bij by chanting, by hearing, by serving, by associating with devotees, so that that little seed now can grow and grow and grow and break through all the coverings of this material universe, the vast thick coverings of this material universe, traverse the vast spiritual sky and go all the way to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, and wrapping itself in their lotus feet and producing prema phal, the fruit of love of God. Is it? You can achieve that. All you have to do is regularly hear and chant Lord Krishna. Become very eager to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's glories. Become very, very keen to always absorb yourself in remembering Krishna, serving Krishna, etc., etc., etc. If you will take this very seriously as your only real purpose for existence, Krishna will see, oh, this one is taking it seriously. Let me give him all help. Let me give him all mercy to assist him in fully awakening his dormant love for me. So don't think that Krishna doesn't see. Krishna can see you. Krishna is watching you. He's observing you to see what is the depth of your sincerity in this process. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs the taiva bhajam yaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna will reciprocate. Actually, if you take one step towards Krishna, he will take 10 steps towards you. So just make that, even that teeny weeny, that itsy bitsy teeny weeny little effort. You see? Just somehow they're trying to move towards Krishna a little bit every day. Every day a little bit closer to Krishna, you see. Just somehow or other, muster the determination that every day I must go a little bit closer to Krishna. You see? Krishna will see. And he will give you all facility to rapidly come to the platform of pure love of God. Rapidly come to the platform of pure love of God. So we have some questions here. We try to answer them. I'm very new to Indian culture and spirituality. How can I understand it and become spiritual? Well, the first thing to understand it is not really Indian. I mean, do I look like an Indian? I'm not an Indian. I'm an American. You know. I came out of that identity. Of course, now I realize that I'm not. But you know, I'm not Indian. I'm not American. In other words, Krishna consciousness is transcendental to American, Indian, Australian, Kiwi, or whatever it may be. It's completely transcendental to all these things. It's getting back to the original nature of the soul before it even entered into the material existence. So that's the first thing to understand. So I'm new to spirituality. Actually, you're not new to spirituality. You think you're new, but actually, this is your original nature. You're not new to it at all. Actually, this is your original nature. You simply forgot. That's it. By this process of Krishna consciousness, you're getting back to your original identity that you had eons and eons and eons ago. It's always been there under the surface, buried. You see, you're a pauper, but actually you have a gold treasure buried in your backyard. You forgot about it. It's your inheritance, this tremendous treasure worth billions of dollars buried in your backyard. Gold coins worth billions of dollars. And here you are worried about paying your rent. You see? Spiritual master says, here's the shovel, there's where you dig. You see? So, you just got to dig. How can I understand it and become spiritual? Just start digging. Here's the shovel. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. At least to say in the 60s, dig it. So dig it. You dig it? Yeah, that was a way of saying, do you understand? Do you dig it? You dig, man? You dig? It used to be saying in the 60s. So dig it. You dig? So take the shovel and dig, and you will unearth the most amazing treasure you could ever imagine. The most amazing treasure of pure love of God. Next, how do we get closer to Krishna consciousness? By getting close to the devotees. Krishna says, yeme bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta stache jana, mad bhakta namche ye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. My dear Arjuna, this is in the Adi Purana for the scholars, my dear Arjuna, those who are my devotees, na me bhaktas, they're not my devotees. But the devotees of my devotees, they're my devotees. So that's how you get closer to Krishna. Get close to the devotees. Make loving relationships with the devotees. You see, that's how you get closer to Krishna consciousness. Could you please explain what will happen if I'm merged into Brahman? In Brahman, there is no sense of individuality. Now note something. It's not some cheap, easy thing. You can just chant Om and merge into Brahman. It is described in the Brahma Samhita. Pantastakoti shatavatsara sampragamyo vayoratapi manaso munipungavanam so piyasti yat prapapachinya vachinya tat vego vindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanis who try to merge into the non-differentiated Brahman after undergoing great penances and austerities for thousands and millions of years. So it's something that will take you many, many, many lifetimes to achieve. And as pointed out by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, even if you're successful emerging into Brahman, you don't even get to touch the lotus foot of Krishna. You're in the precincts, you're in the vicinity of his lotus feet, but you're not actually there. You're outside the city limits. So you have a sense that it's a sense of suspended animation. It's a sense of non-existence. But it gives some temporary relief from all the pains of the three modes of material nature, but it doesn't actually give satisfaction to the self. Therefore, patanti adho, those Brahmanandis who are tasting the so-called bliss of Brahman, they come back again to enjoy material sense gratification because they have a sense of identity in material sense gratification. Whether those merged within Brahman still come to the material worth, yes, they do. Patanti adho, they fall back again because they have no regard for the lotus feet of the Lord. If you want to actually get out of material existence, you have to learn how to love Krishna, not try to become Krishna by merging into the absolute. It's a very important thing. It's a very important thing. I was on that path myself previously, trying to merge and become one with God. But one night I had a realization, because I was trying to deny. There's this process of the impersonalist, neti. Not this, not that. The absolute truth is not this, it's not that. You just deny. And the idea is you chop away at everything the absolute truth is not, and that way you realize the absolute truth. You see, but that's not a full process. It's only a halfway of the process, called half-hen logic, you see. So Krishna blessed me with a realization, actually, because I was doing this neti-neti, deny. One night I had a profound realization, back in December of 1968, in Houston, Texas. I wrote it down. I said, I denied and I denied until I could deny no longer, and then I had to start accepting. So they're going neti, and every possibly thing they can do a neti on, but after you've netied everything, what is left to do a neti on? You got to do a neti on neti. You see? You've taken the axe to chop down the forest, and now you got to throw away the axe too. You see? So I realized this process of denial eventually has to be denied. The perfection of denial is to deny denial also. You see? And then you have to accept something that's transcendental to this material existence. So that realization led me to this movement. You see? You have to accept something that's transcendental to this material existence. So, you mentioned one of the previous year's lecture, a quote from Srila Prabhupada, that one should feel Krishna while chanting. Can you please elaborate? Oh, yeah, it's a great quote. He wrote one of my god sisters on how to chant japa. When you chant japa, she said, feel the presence of Krishna. So that's the ideal standard of japa. And he said, if you can't do that, then just concentrate on the sound vibration. That's secondary. So we should always try to go for the first thing, which is to feel the presence of Krishna. You may say, well, how can I feel the presence of Krishna? I mean, he's not present, is he? Oh, wait a minute. Krishna is present. Do you think his name and he are different? You're an atheist. You're a Pashandi. If you think he and his name are different. Krishna is Krishna. That sound vibration, that is Krishna himself. So remember this. Beat your mind with shoes and broomstick to remind yourself, Krishna is Krishna. You see? So Krishna has come to you. He is blessing you with his association. Now just try to feel how Krishna is present in Krishna. You see? In this way. That's what we should go for when we chant our rounds. Now Krishna has come to bless me with his personal darshan. My own private darshan with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Wow! This is the ultimate experience. It's right here in my japa every day. You see? In this way, try to understand it. Don't take it, I got to get those things over with. No. You see? I feel very disqualified to preach Krishna consciousness. Jai, that is your qualification. You're certified now. Guru. Lord Chaitanya has become guru. So the first qualification is to realize, I'm not qualified to do this. Because of past sinful activities. Well, join the club. We're all rascals, you know. Most of us, anyway. Actually, all of us were eating boga. Some of us are doing worse things, you know. Eating meat, having illicit sex, taking drugs, all, you know, so many things. Look at Bibhamangala Thakur. He was a playboy. He had fallen to be a woman hunter, you see. But he became the greatest pure devotee of the Lord. So we have to remember that this process, it doesn't matter how sinful you may have been, if you take seriously this process, you can become a liberated soul, completely. Bibhamangala was so advanced, even though his body was here in this world, he was actually in the spiritual world in the pastimes of Krishna. That's how pure he became. He lived for hundreds of years in Vrindavan, relishing the mellows of personal association with Krishna and Krishna's associates. So to overcome it, well, get initiated. The spiritual master very kindly absorbs your karma. Of course, he doesn't keep it. He passes on up the Guru Parampara. It ultimately is absorbed by Krishna. But at the time of initiation, the spiritual master transmits, his karma goes, your karma goes through him to the parampara to Krishna. So the spiritual master collects your karma and passes it on up to Krishna at the time of initiation. So you got to get initiated. It's a very important thing. The process of initiation relieves you of those, of practically all your sins. A little token is left. Some token reactions are left to keep you sober. But that initiation is very important. Take shelter of a guru, get initiated, and become very, very obedient to your spiritual master. What is the meaning of grihastha brahmachari? It means he only has sex for procreation. He doesn't have sex for recreation. How a couple could abstain from illicit sex? It's very simple. Prabhupada gave the standard for a sex life for a household is get your spiritual master permission to try to have a child, and then just after the menstrual cycle, once in a month only, not more than that, after the husband and wife both chant at least 50 rounds of japa, then they can try to have a child. I often remember an example in this regard. There was a brahmachari there in our Miami temple. Way back in about 72, I think it was. And one householder couple, they walked up to me, the man was telling me, Sankarshan Prabhu, I just wanted to share something with you. He said, my wife and I, you know, we wanted to have a child, so we chanted, last night we chanted 50 rounds so we could try to have a child. And but after chanting 50 rounds, we were so much relishing Krishna Nan, we said, let's wait till next month to have sex. They were getting more pleasure from Hare Krishna than they were from having sex. You see? This is grihastha brahmacharya. Sex is not some thing that, whoopee, time to have sex. Not like that. It's like, all right, we're going to have a child. This is what we have to do to have a child. But to protect ourselves from becoming completely overwhelmed by material consciousness, we're going to chant 50 rounds of japa first. And to sanctify it, the whole act, so, and make it into a yajna, you see, so that Krishna will send a very special child to bless us in our spiritual life. How we have artificial relationship with devotees and with Krishna until we develop, can we have an artificial relationship with devotees and with Krishna until we develop the loving relationship. Well, that's what we do. That's unavoidable, because we come out of a lusty, greedy, selfish mentality, and if you, in one sense, we do have genuine relationships, but if you actually look at it from the perspective of pure bhakti, you know, we start off with artificial relationships, really. What's in it for me? You know, it's, we come in very greedy and selfish and thinking of using other people to our advantage. That's how we start off. But by Krishna's grace, we can move beyond that very quickly. Because Prabhupada gave his genuine loving kindness to us, and that inspired a whole mood within ISKCON. It's all coming from Prabhupada, you see. No one knew what his pure, selfish, pure, selfless relationships. No one knew. In the material world, there is no such thing as a pure, selfless relationship. Every relationship is contaminated and artificial to some degree. Every relationship. But it took a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada to give unconditional love, genuine love, to those disciples, you see. And they learned something from that. And then they passed it on. So it's coming down, you see. It's all coming from Prabhupada. The genuine loving relationships that we find in ISKCON, it's all the mercy of Prabhupada. Because he showed us what does it mean to really be a loving person. Genuine loving person. And so that has been passed down from Prabhupada. I am a student now. Now, how important is brahmachari, or full-time service in the temple? I'm in a dilemma whether to get a job or to try the ashram for some years. Please advise. When in doubt, do what is best for your Krishna consciousness. Actually, in Pune, they have a very wonderful brahmachari ashram. 300 brahmacharis. I mean, they're really, really nice brahmacharis. I go there twice a year. It's like being in the spiritual world, but it's really something. 300 brahmacharis. So they have a policy there. If you want to be a brahmachari, number one, you have to have a college degree. They don't want loafers in the brahmachari ashram. You have to have a college degree, and you have to have worked professionally after you graduated also. I asked the head brahmachari, Radhe Shyam Das, why. He said, well, actually, it's a practical thing. Because they have big programs in the preaching in the universities. And if the university students were dropping out to join the brahmachari ashram, the colleges wouldn't let them come anymore. And if the parents put up all that money to put their boys through school, and they immediately go to the brahmachari ashram without paying off their debts, then it burns all the parents also. So that's their policy. They keep a good relationship with the university, and it minimizes any bad feelings from the parents, because the boys work for some time, they get work experience, they pay off all their student debts, and then they join the brahmachari ashram. So and from the material side, it's very good, but also spiritually, those men are very fixed. They know how to succeed in college. They know how to succeed in the professional workplace also. They're not losers. They know how to deal in the material world successfully. And they're very powerful preachers, therefore. They're very powerful preachers. So, here, I don't think you have that policy. You have to work. I don't know what the policy is here for brahmachari. Do they have to have a college degree to join the ashram here? No? If that had been the case, I couldn't have joined. I was a dropout. definitely the get your degree. Prabhupada would have devotees finish their degrees. Our Trivikram Swami, he moved into the temple while he was still going to school, and he finished his studies while he was in the temple as a brahmachari. He finished his degree. So definitely don't drop out of school. because that didn't, I know our Birabahu Prabhu, one of our GBCs, he and his wife were both college students at the time, and they both finished their degrees. It's so at least all the, anyone's a student, they should finish their degree. Even if they can live in the ashram and do that. Depending on the situation of the temple, but I'm saying in principle, Prabhupada allowed that. And as far as getting a job, well, have you paid off your student loan? Did your parents fund your college studies? Did you pay back your parents all the money they put forward for your college studies? These are questions we'd have. It's an individual thing. We'd have to analyze it, according to the individual situation. I can't say definitively without interviewing this person and seeing what are all the details of the situation. Whether I should pilgrimage to Vrindavan or Mayapur, which is more transcendental? Now, wait a minute. This is a dham aparad. To think there's a difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan, that is a dham aparad. So kick out that idea. Whether you go to Mayapur or you go to Vrindavan, you're there. It's like saying, you know, is Lord Chaitanya God or is Krishna God? I mean, you're there. Either way, you're okay. Either way, you're okay. How to understand what our quota is? Well, it's very simple. Prabhupada told us to deliver the whole world, so your quota is to see that this every living entity in the entire universe goes back to God. Until that's happened, you haven't fulfilled your quota yet, Prabhu. How do we know Krishna is reciprocating? Krishna is reciprocating. I'm telling from Prabhupada's books. A careful study of Prabhupada's books makes it very clear that Krishna is reciprocating. So Prabhupada says that Krishna is reciprocating. So you accept it on the authority of Prabhupada, that Krishna is reciprocating with you. Yeyatamang prapanyante tangstataiva bhajamyaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reciprocate with them. It's stated right there in the Gita. So everybody is getting some sort of reciprocation from Krishna, according to their degree of surrender. Why the doorkeepers are needed in Vaikuntha? That's an interesting question. To keep the nonsense out. I'm following all the instructions of my Diksha Guru. Jai. That's wonderful. Can I still ask instruction from you also, as you inspire me a lot? Prabhupada told us very clearly in Austin, what is the relationship between Diksha and Siksha Guru? I'll give you a little history on it. We had an incredibly empowered Diksha Guru named Vishnu Janaswami who had converted us from hippies into happies. Okay, we were really, we loved him. I mean, he was our mother, our father, he was everything all old in one. I mean, he was it for us, Vishnujan Swami. We called him Swami.
His question is that if you can also take instruction.
I'm getting to that point. I'm getting to that point. I know the question and I'm getting to the point. I'm giving a deep and a thorough answer. So, our Sri Galim, my godbrother, he said, Vishnu Jan Swami is also my guru. Not only Prabhupada, Vishnu Jan Swami is also my guru. So one devotee, from a householder, his name was Hridayananda Das Adhikari, who became Hridayananda Goswami. He came up from Houston and he heard this. He said, oh, this is Maya. Only Prabhupada is your guru. You can't think of Vishnu Jan Swami as your guru. Only Prabhupada is your guru. So Sri Galim wrote Prabhupada and asked him, is it all right if I think that Vishnu Jan Swami is my guru? He asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada explained that actually you only have one guru, and that's the one who initiates you. But others who teach you the same thing as your guru is teaching, they can also be taken as guru. So, This question was asked of me. I say, well, if I'm teaching you the same thing your Diksha Guru is teaching you, yes, you can accept me as Guru. But I'm saying something different, no, you cannot. But it should be the same because we're all presenting Prabhupada's teachings. But I'm saying the principle is, if I'm teaching you exactly what your Diksha Guru is taking, then you can accept me as a Siksha Guru. But I'm saying something different, don't come to my classes. Stay away. Stay away from me, because I'm poisoning you. But hopefully that's not the case, because we're all preaching what Prabhupada says. Is it the mercy of Krishna when Vaishnavas come to your home? Oh, yes. You mentioned that all devotees should homeschool. If you are very firm on it, why you are so firm in believing this? Well, if it's possible, if at all possible, either a home, either a gurukul is the best. If it's done properly, that's the best thing. But if there's not a gurukul available, then homeschooling is very, very favorable. Our ISKCON devotee, Avruta Devi Dasi, has written a very wonderful book about homeschooling, how to do it. She homeschooled her boys. The first boy she homeschooled was Ravi Gupta. At the age 13, he entered the university. He excelled in the university, became a PhD. Now he's a big, big college professor. Mm-hmm. The history is there. That homeschooling is very, very valuable for the child not to be out there polluted by all the mundane association with little kids who are having illicit sex and talking all kinds of vulgar, dirty words and all this gross stuff that they're exposed to when they go to public school or even a private school with their karmic kids. So it's very much favorable if you can raise your child. I was talking to the household the other day, he was doing it, just like Ravi, he was... just like they have the primer, the reading primer. So, Ruta Devi Dasi, her primer for reading, the child learned how to read, was the Srimad Bhagavatam. He learned how to read by studying the Bhagavatam, if you can imagine. So I think one of our local devotees told me, was that you all? He's reading Bhagavatam also. What's his age now? He's a 6-year-old boy, and he's reading Bhagavatam. Where is he? Is he here now? So it's doable, it's practical, it's happening right here in Melbourne right now. A 6-year-old child is learning how to read, studying the Bhagavatam. So do you want to send your child to the slaughterhouse, or do you want to send him back to Godhead? You say, well, we can't afford it, we bought a real expensive house, so both of us have to work to pay the mortgage. Well, what can I say? It was your choice. Better live a little more simply, let one spouse stay at home and homeschool the child. That's the best thing. If you can pull it off. If you can't, then you just do the best you can. If it's unavoidable, or you have to send your kid to karmic school, then you have to train your child how to hear Vaishnavas. Because if they can't sit and hear a lecture with attention and comprehension, their first experience of hearing with attention and comprehension will be from karmis. So you can understand what effect that I have on their consciousness. So if they have to go to public school, then before they ever go to school, before they ever start their schooling, get them accustomed to hearing Krishna conscious teachings, Krishna conscious lectures and classes, hearing them with attention and comprehension. So that they've already imbibed Krishna consciousness before they hit the public school. That's less than ideal, but it's better than nothing. Okay, how to overcome anger? Is it really possible? Oh yes, it is. Anger comes from lust. Kama krodha, esha krodha. It's described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text number 37, you see. Kama isha krodha isha rajaguna samudbhavaha. That anger is coming from unfulfilled lusty desires. Lusti means the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So if you will give up that desire to enjoy separately from Krishna and only want to please Krishna with your every thought, word, and deed, in all times, places, and circumstances, anger will not be able to touch you. Yes? We're going over time? What's the time cut off now?
Nine.
We have 20 minutes. It's quarter of it, so it's about, it's now 19 minutes till 9. We have 19 minutes.
Generally, it's 7:30 to 8:30, 1 hour.
It's up to the devotees to say. We're just visiting. I don't know what the standard is. 9 o'clock is cool? Okay, everyone says 9. Okay. Why drugs are rejected as an artificial means to become spiritual? Because I feel beyond the body and very transcendental after taking it. Yeah, this was the philosophy of Timothy Leary, I remember, Dr. Timothy Leary. Tune in, turn on, and drop out. The idea is you take LSD and you become self-realized. But Prabhupada talked about this. He said, he had a talk, actually Allen Ginsberg, the hip poet or the beat poet, was very attracted to Prabhupada's kirtan and his personality, and he met with Prabhupada. He actually helped Prabhupada in the early days. The first harmonium of ISKCON was donated by Allen Ginsberg. But he was an LSD freak, as we used to say. He was an LSD taker. So he was promoting the idea of LSD to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said that you're basing it on a material pill. It's not transcendental because you're something material. You're basing it on a chemical, which is material. And then Alan encountered, but the mantra is also material. But no, it's Shabda Brahma, it's transcendental. So since you're basing your so-called spirituality on something material, an LSD tab or a peyote cactus or whatever you're taking, therefore it's not, you're not really becoming self-realized. You're basing your spirituality on something material. So therefore, it's not really spiritual. So this is a way to try to understand. Yeah.
It's a deranged brain.
Huh?
It's a deranged brain.
Deranged brain? Yes. It's a fact. These drugs are actually not good for your brain. Arsadaputta also was a youngster during the hippie era, but he never took any drugs at all because he didn't want to hurt it, mess up his brain. He was intelligent, Arsadaputta. He didn't take, even though he had hippie friends and everything, in those era he didn't take any drugs at all. Never smoked marijuana, he didn't take anything because he didn't want to mess up his brain. And he had a very good brain, Arsadaputta. You read his books, he's a very, very good brain. So you want to have a good brain, don't take any drugs. Just chant Hare Krishna. Is the gross body related to the subtle body? Temporarily it is within this life, but the subtle body goes on to your next gross body. Temporarily there is a connection, but it doesn't remain. Okay, why there are not many ISKCON temples in the USA? We have more than Australia has. Why are there not more temples in Australia? Actually, the standard is to have an ISKCON temple in every town and village of the whole planet. Why pick on the USA? It's because of our lack of Krishna consciousness, really. If we were more Krishna conscious, there'd be a lot more temples. We're just not Krishna conscious enough. I'll be honest with you. We are deficient in Krishna consciousness. We're still hovering on the neophyte platform. We're not becoming advanced. We're holding on to our material attachments. Therefore, the whole world isn't Krishna conscious yet. So, Bahir Nisringa, we sing every morning, Bahir Nisringa, Hridare Nisringa, we forget the meaning. Prabhupada describes the meaning of Bihir Nisringa Hridraya Nisringa. May Nrisimhadev reside in the core of my heart, driving away all the dirt, and may I become empowered to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. That is the meaning of Bahir Nrisimha, Hridaye Nrisimha. We have to understand this meaning and actually implement Bahir Nrisimha, Hridaye Nrisimha. Awaken the self, awaken the universe. That should be our motto, you see. Awaken the self and awaken the whole universe. That mood we have to imbibe in every ISKCON devotee. When that happens, there'll be a temple in every town and village on this planet. Okay. Why does the material world look so attractive? Because it's an energy of Krishna. And because Krishna is all attractive, and this material world is also an energy of Krishna, therefore it appears to be attractive. How to feel inspired to progress in devotional life? You have to associate with devotees who are very, very inspired, and that will inspire you. You have to see those who are inspired, and that will inspire you. What is the most important thing to make progress? Good relationships with devotees. Loving relationships with devotees. When we say love, there are two persons involved at least. When we try to love Krishna, it's a little difficult as we don't have gross perception. Whereas in this world, we have immediate reciprocation. How do we understand Krishna's reciprocation? That comes through the meeting of the devotees. You see, that's why we have a spiritual master. That's why we have Vaishnava Sangha. Because Krishna's mercy and reciprocation comes through the via medium of your spiritual master and the Vaishnavas.
Krishna is reciprocating, but we are not appreciating.
When you don't appreciate the devotee's kindness and love, then you're not appreciating Krishna's reciprocation.
Krishna is already doing.
I'm saying, but it's not being appreciated. We don't realize it. Krishna's kindness is coming through the maya medium of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. We don't realize it. We're dull-headed.
He's beyond that also.
Huh?
He's giving us so much. We don't appreciate that. So how can we understand Krishna? He's giving air that we breathe. He's giving the light. Air that we breathe.
Yeah.
So how much we wanted to
do? Krishna is not reciprocating. Well, when was the last time you took a breath of air, sir? He just gave you a breath of air. He just gave you something to eat. He just gave you some clothes to wear, a place to live. He gave you a car. He gave you some. Krishna is giving you everything, and you're just not acknowledging it. You're so selfish and blind. You're thinking you deserve all this. Krishna is giving us his causeless mercy upon you to give you all these things. He's reciprocating with you unlimitedly every minute, but you're so dull, you're so blind, you don't recognize it. Sometimes we feel frustrated even after chanting 16 rounds for so many years. Why is this? Because you haven't developed a taste for the name, Prabhu. You haven't come to Namaruchi. You have to come to Namaruchi. How to get there? It's very simple. Rupa Goswami describes. You have faith, you associate with devotees, you take initiation, you obey your spiritual master, you follow regulative principles, and by doing that, your lust, your greed, your anger, illusion, madness, and envy, they gradually evaporate. You become a solidly fixed up devotee, and then the name becomes unlimitedly sweet. So if you're not tasting the nectar of the name, you have to see what are the offenses you're committing. How are you being rude to devotees? How are you not properly chanting the holy name, avoiding the 10 offenses? You have to see what you're doing wrong. You should be experiencing the name as sweeter than the sweetest honey. You should be. And if you're not, you're doing something wrong. There's some defect in your sadhana. You have to find out, what is wrong with my sadhana? What's wrong with my attitude that I'm not tasting the sweetest nectar in Krishna's name? The planets surrounding the Earth planets, as we study during childhood and geography, are they the same as what the Bhagavatam describes? Or are they just representations? There are some similarities, what science talks about and what the Bhagavatam is, but not so many. There's a big difference in the Vedic cosmology, and the cosmology as we learn it from the modern scientists. So which one should you take as gospel? You should take the Vedic cosmology because it's never changed. The cosmology of the scientists is always changing. They have a different view of the universe, and it's constantly changing. And it will always change because it's based on the platform of the mind. The mind is always jumping like a monkey from this branch to that branch. So the Vedic cosmology is what you have to accept. If you really want to know what is the structure of the universe. If there are not heavenly planets, there are heavenly planets. Are there still living entities? There are living entities every planet throughout the entire universe. What is the importance of taking birth in Brajabhumi? It's not very important. We see so many people there. Of course, it's a great blessing. But mostly they're not taking advantage of it. Prabhupada says those who take birth in the holy dham and engage in sinful activities, which is most of the people nowadays in the holy dham, they take birth as animals in the holy dham in their next birth. Dogs, monkeys, pigs, etc. And then they have to suffer in that position, and from there they can go back to Godhead. So taking birth in the holy dham is a great benediction, but mostly they're not properly taking advantage of it. So many people, of course there are some very pure souls there, but mostly they're just like ordinary karmi, and they will have to take birth again as animals in the holy dham and suffer in that position, and then they can go back to Godhead. So it's a great blessing, but they're not taking proper full advantage. The most important thing is you take birth again in Krishna consciousness by taking shelter and initiation of the bona fide spiritual master. Okay, a devotee in Krishna consciousness will be able to experience Brahman, Paramat, and Bhagavan realization progressively. Actually, we just go straight for Bhagavan realization, and within that, Paramatma and Brahman realization are included. We don't worry about, you know, gradually, well, let me go for Brahman realization first, and then I'll progress to Paramatma realization, and then progress further to... No, we don't do that. We go straight for Bhagavan. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when you awaken your Krishna consciousness, you're automatically Brahman realized and Paramatma realized. And also, aham brahmasmi, what does brahmasmi mean? I am spirit. And that spirit means I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. We hear that the time of initiation, one begins the process of devotional service. What is happening when one is practicing Krishna consciousness before initiation? Well, there are steps before initiation, but this is not really true because, as I just explained, Rupa Goswami gives the different processes of devotional service. There are two steps before initiation: having faith in the process, associating with devotees. There are two steps before initiation. It's not that devotional service begins at initiation, it becomes more mature at the time of initiation. In the 11th canto, Pure Devotional Service, Srila Jiva Goswami in the purport points out that in material heaven one becomes absorbed in, extraordinary sense gratification? Yes. And in hell one is absorbed in suffering. In both cases there is little emphasized, underlined, quotes, little impetus to acquire transcendental knowledge or pure love of Godhead. Kindly explain why they say suffering is an impetus. It's stated, according to what it's stated here, the purport says there is little impetus. That means there's practically no impetus. Whether you're enjoying in heaven or you're suffering in hell, there's little impetus to acquire transcendental knowledge. So it's not emphasizing that suffering is an impetus. It's saying there's hardly any impetus at all when you're suffering in the hellish planets. That's the advantage of suffering on the earthly plane. Because on this plane, there the mix between enjoyment is perfectly suitable to make you most inclined to take up the process of self-realization. This is the very best planet for self-realization. Okay. I have read in different places in Shastra that Krishna takes care of a devotee's family generations before and after. Does this refer only to pure devotees? Anyone who becomes qualified to go back to Godhead. That means ultimately, yes. If you're somebody who didn't qualify themselves, who didn't have to take birth again, it's not the same. If you're a person who becomes qualified to go back to Godhead, Krishna will take care of many generations of those related with you. So you want to save your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. And you'll find, wow, they're all here. Dad, remember when you didn't like my tilak? How to serve the spiritual master in separation? By following his instructions. You take the order of your spiritual master as your very life and soul. Prabhupada says you meditate and worship the order you have received from your spiritual master. You worship it as sacred. You see, that's how you'll never be separated. Prabhupada said, I was never separated from my spiritual master, not even for 1 minute, you see. He took Guru Maharaj's order into his heart and embraced it as his very life and soul, that I must somehow spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. I don't know how I can do it, but somehow I have to do it because I have been ordered by my spiritual master. So that kind of feeling, that kind of intensity of consciousness, if you take that and deep into your heart, you'll always have Guru Maharaj's lotus feet right there on your head at every minute. Is it absolutely necessary for every disciple to receive direct interaction from one's Diksha Guru? No, it's not. Prabhupada said, I saw my spiritual master not more than 10 times, maybe not even that many times. So physical association is not that important. When you can get it, go for it. It's really valuable because it helps you a lot, but it's not. I only saw Prabhupada a few times. I saw him at the Ratha Yatra in L.A., in Frisco, I mean, and I saw him in L.A. after the Ratha Yatra. Then I saw him at New Vrindavan, in Pittsburgh, there's 4 times. And I can't remember anything after that. In 71 and 72 I saw Prabhupada. I can't remember anything after that. 73, 74, I think that was it. That was in the 2 years. But I got quite a few letters from him. That was special magnet. But it's not absolutely essential. If you can get it, go for it, because it will help you. Whenever you can get a chance to be in the physical presence of your spiritual master, go for it, because it will give you strength to connect with his instructions. That's the point. If you're with your spiritual master and he gives you instruction, you argue with him, you're just defeating the whole purpose. Say, no, Guru Maharaj, I can't do that. Then you're defeating the whole purpose. You should approach your spiritual master with all humility, and yes, your order is my life and soul. If you tell me to do this, I'll sacrifice everything and I'll do exactly what you told me to do. That's how you have to associate with him if you're in his physical presence. Oh, again, 75, I saw Prabhupada in 75, yeah. I got my Brahmin thread directly from Prabhupada. Private darshan with Prabhupada. Wow, it was really sweet. So take advantage of the physical presence and be fully obedient. And then that mood of being fully obedient will keep you in his constant association, even in his physical absence. Okay, now the last question. I understand that most problems I face arise from within. In other words, unwanted desires in the heart and uncontrolled mind. But is it advisable to change external circumstances, such as changing services, changing locations, so you might improve sadhana health and seva? Can external changes help improve internal problems? Prabhupada directly answered this question in one letter to a householder. This boy was a brahmachari, and he was thinking, well, you know, I'm not really happy as a brahmachari. Just to be happy, I have to get married. Then I'll be happy if I get married. He got married, he was miserable. And he wrote Prabhupada, Prabhupada, can I take sannyas? Prabhupada did not appreciate it, his attitude. You are thinking that by changing your external situation you become happy? It's not true, Prabhupada told him. He said, your unhappiness is due to your lack of Krishna consciousness, not the external situation. So you have to, everyone should understand this. It's not that by changing ashrams you can become happy. By getting married you can become happy, or by taking sannyas you can get happy. The external things don't really do it. The real thing is you simply have to take shelter of Krishna. That's all. If you do that, you can be happy in any situation as a brahmachari, a grihastha, a sannyasi, a vanaprastha. In any situation, in any temple, in any circumstance, anywhere within the whole material existence, if you simply focus on being fully absorbed in hearing about, talking about, remembering, and serving that incredibly beautiful person who's standing in the bank of Keshi God playing the fifth note on his flute during the full moon night of the Sharad season, you'll be okay. You'll be fine. Now, sometimes there may be a situation where there is difficulty. Maybe you have so much service, you don't have enough time to sleep at night, and you're not able to get your rounds done because they're engaging in service like 22 hours a day and need a little time to take some rest. You know, there are situations that you can speak to your temple authorities or your spiritual master. And explain, I'm having some difficulty with this service. Is there any way these can be adjusted? Prabhupada was also very flexible. I'm giving the other side of the coin now. Both sides are true. For example, in Los Angeles Temple, our Madhavisa was there and our Tamakrishna was there. And they were, as Madhavisa Maharaj explained, they were always at loggerheads. So Prabhupada's solution is very simple. He sent Madhavisha to become the temple president in San Francisco. And the problem was solved immediately. So sometimes there are external arrangements that can be made that facilitate Krishna consciousness. So both sides are true. But ultimately the bottom line is what I explained in the beginning. You see? And even if there's an external arrangement, your service is changed. If you're not focusing on being Krishna conscious, it won't work. That's the real point, you see. Sometimes there does need to be a change of service for a devotee. Sometimes there does need to be a change of ashram for a devotee. Sometimes it's necessary. But you have to understand that will really, that can help you, but it really won't solve the problem. It can assist you in solving the problem, but the real solution is to become Krishna conscious. That you have to understand. You see, it's like a girl wants to get a husband. She feels she has to have her husband be Krishna conscious. All right. Prabhupada wanted the girls to be married. But don't think that just by getting married, now all my problems are solved. The only way you can really be happy is to fully surrender to Krishna. That's the bottom line. Okay, we'll stop here. Kantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi. Jai.